Okay. So let's cultivate our motivation. And especially since today is Vesak Day, venerating the Buddhist enlightenment, and the chief realization that enabled him to purify his mind completely of all afflictions and defilements was the wisdom realizing emptiness, the nature of reality, directly, non-conceptually. And so with a motivation to gain that same realization ourselves, so that we can purify our mind and attain full enlightenment for the benefit of all living beings, then let's listen to the teachings this evening. There's just one question before we begin the actual teaching. Somebody wanted me to review the three kind of incorrect ways of meditating, the three detours that of meditating on emptiness that I spoke about last time. So the first one was getting stuck in a stage of some kind of single-pointed concentration, such as the jhanas or the formless realm absorptions. And so there, your meditation object could be the Buddha, it could be any kind of thing, but you're focused on whatever object you're on single-pointedly. It's extremely peaceful, and so you just stay stuck in that. And some people even mistake that for liberation, not even thinking that they have to gain another, you know, gain realizations of wisdom. Some people may just spend a lot of time in these states of meditative absorption because they enjoy them so much. So that's one detour. A second detour is that you stay in a state of non-conceptuality. And so here it's blank-minded meditation. You've gotten rid of all kind of thought or content in your mind whatsoever, and you remain just focused on light-mindedness, that kind of non-conceptuality. Okay, again, thinking that that's the realization of emptiness, which it isn't. Okay. And then the third one is you've done some analysis of emptiness, but you haven't really, you know, reached the correct conclusion. You haven't gone far enough in your analysis, or you've gone too far, and you've gone to nihilism. But in any case, you remain focused on whatever conclusion you reached, but it's not the correct one. Okay. So in any of those three situations, you may meditate for a long time, but none of them is going to be able to purify your mind of all the afflictions, because none of them is perceiving the emptiness of inherent existence directly, non-conceptually, and correctly. Okay? Okay, so that's the question. Then we're on the section in the book where we're talking about the doing the analysis of how the I exists. So we're talking about the time when you're doing formal meditation, okay, and you're trying to see how is it that the self, the person, the I exists. And so here you're analyzing, is the person one with the aggregates, okay, the body, feelings, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness, or is it something entirely different from them? Okay. And in other words, how does this the I exist? What is the nature of this I in relationship to the aggregates, which are its basis of designation? Because, you know, when we're grasping at inherent existence, we have some feeling of the I somewhere being within the aggregates, but also being independent of the aggregates. Okay? So if the I really existed in that way, as inherent, you know, some inherently findable thing, then when we analyzed, we should be able to find it either within the aggregates or as something totally separate from the aggregates. Okay? So then we analyze, is the person one with the aggregates or is it completely separate from the aggregates? Okay? So right now, we're looking at, is the person one with the aggregates? Now, normally, if something is one nature, if two things are one nature, it isn't required that they be inherently one. Or if two things are different, it isn't required that they be totally unrelated. But when we're talking about things existing inherently, if they existed inherently, okay, then two things either have to be completely merged and be one and the same, or they have to be completely separate and different and unrelated. Okay, if we're just talking conventionally, it's not required that they be completely one and the same or totally unrelated. But when we're talking in terms of inherent existence, because inherent existence means that things are independent, they don't rely on any other factors, then if they're one, they have to be completely merged. And if they're different, they have to be totally separate and unrelated. Okay? Because that's what inherent existence entails. Conventional existence doesn't entail that. Okay? So conventionally, the person, you know, the aggregates are one nature with the person. Okay? But they're also different. That's fine. You know, in conventional level, that's all fine. But as soon as you start operating on the level of inherent existence, that doesn't work anymore. Okay? Because inherent existence, we're referring to independent things that don't depend on any other factors. Okay? So we begin by looking and analyzing, is the self one, inherently one, with the aggregates? Okay. Is the self inherently one with the aggregates? If the self is inherently one and the same with the aggregates, then there are four faults that can occur. Okay, we'll go through them one by one, but I just want to listen. The first one is that asserting a self would be redundant. Okay. Second one is that either the person would be many or the aggregates would be one in number. Third one is that the agent and the object would be undifferentiable. They would be the same thing. And fourth one is that the person would have to arise and disintegrate inherently. Okay? So I'm going to go through and explain what all those mean. Yeah, so there's a certain kind of vocabulary you have to understand here. Okay, so let's look at the first one, that if the self and the aggregates were inherently one and the same, then asserting a self would be redundant. Now, why is that? Okay. Well, if the aggregates and the self, if I am exactly one and the same with any of my aggregates, if I am the body or I am the mind, yeah, then those two things are undifferentiable. Which means that whenever, let's say I say I'm one with my body. If those two things are indifferentiable, then the two names can be used interchangeably. Because whenever you say one, you're automatically meaning the other. Okay? So if that were the case, then when I say I'm thinking, I should be able to say body is thinking. Or if I say that I'm, you know, one and the same with my mind, then when I say I'm walking, I could just as easily say the mind is walking. Now, none of that works, does it? Okay? Because the person and the aggregates are not inherently one and the same. They're different. They're related, but they're not one and the same. Okay? Also, if the aggregates and the self were one and the same, then you should perceive them. You know, when you perceive the body, you should perceive the self. Or when you perceive the mind, you should perceive the self. But you don't. Okay? So those things are not interchangeable. We can't say that the self is inherently one with the body, because we would have the consequence that then saying, even asserting a self, would be redundant, because all you have to do, you know, if you perceive the body, you would be perceiving the person. That's all there is to it. You don't need the mind or anything else. And you could say, I'm thinking, and you can say the body is thinking, and it would mean exactly the same thing. So that doesn't work. Okay? So that's why that first fault would come about, that asserting a self would be redundant. Okay? Second fault that comes about is that either because you have many aggregates, we have five aggregates, so if the person and the aggregates were exactly the same, then since the person is one in number, you should only have one aggregate. But that's not true. We have five. Or, since the aggregates are five in number, you should have five selves. Okay? We don't have five selves. We only have one self. Okay? So, if these things were inherently one and the same, then you'd have this kind of difficulty coming about. That you'd either have to have, you know, five persons or one aggregate, and none of that works. Okay? Then the third consequence, you know, that would happen if the self and the aggregates were one and the same, is that the agent and the object would be identical. Okay? Now, when we talk about, like, rebirth, we say that the person takes another body. Now, this sounds really funny in English, that, you know, that you can translate it as the person takes another body, the person appropriates another body, the person clings to another body. But don't get the idea that there's some independent person sitting there in the sky looking down saying, what body should I cling to? What body should I appropriate? It's not like that. So don't get that idea when we use that kind of language in English. That's not the meaning of it. But just when you're talking conventionally about the conventionally existent person, the one that's merely labeled, we say, you know, the person takes another body in their next life and, you know, when they're reborn. Yeah. Now, if the person and the aggregates were the same, then you couldn't say the person took another body, because the person and the body would already be identical and would be one and the same. So you couldn't have one being the agent, the one that's taking, and the other one being the object, the one that is being taken. Yeah? Communicating? Okay. So we couldn't say that. Yeah? Or even if we say, I'm lifting my arm, okay? If the let's say the person were the same thing as the mind, then you would say the mind is lifting the arm. Yeah? Or you would say the body is lifting the arm. But we usually say, I'm lifting my arm. Okay? So all these things would get very confused if we say that the person and any of the aggregates are completely inseparable and identical, inherent, which would have to be the case, you know, if they were inherently existent. Then, okay, then the fourth drawback, the fourth consequence, would be that the person would then inherently arise and disintegrate. Okay? So a person arises, they come into being, they disintegrate, they go out of being. Okay? Conventionally, all that happens. Now, to say that a person inherently arises and inherently ceases. Okay? So remember, inherent means that it doesn't depend on anything else. It's independent on other factors. Which would mean that the person could arise without causes. Okay? It could cease without causes. Okay? None of these things would depend on each other. Or we would say the person was totally permanent because an inherently existent person doesn't depend on anything else. So the person would be permanent, which would mean the person couldn't change moment to moment. Okay? Or if we do say the person changes moment to moment, the second moment would be totally unrelated to the first moment. Okay? Because remember, inherently existent things don't depend on anything else. Okay? So, if you had an inherently existent self, and we said it, you know, first of all, it would be permanent, it couldn't change. But even if you said it changed, okay, and it produced, and moment one of the self produced moment two of the self, then moment two would be completely unrelated to moment one, because if they're inherently existent, they are independent of everything else. So that would mean that the me of today and the me of tomorrow are totally unrelated. Okay? Now, if who I am today and who I am tomorrow are totally unrelated, then we're going to have some problems there. Okay? So first of all, I won't even be able to remember anything because tomorrow's self is going to be totally unrelated to yesterday's self or to today's self. And if these two, you know, today's self and tomorrow's self are unrelated, then what I do today is not going to influence what happens to me tomorrow. You know, I could stay up all night. The eye of today could stay up all night. And the eye of tomorrow isn't going to be tired because they're not related to each other. Okay? So we're going to get all sorts of weird problems if this. Or if, you know, the self of today, or put it this way, if the self when I'm 5 years old and the self I am today are two, you know, if they are inherently existent, if both of them inherently arose and inherently cease, then they're going to be unrelated to each other. So then there's no way I could say I remember being 5 years old. Or when I was 5 years old, I used to roller skate. I couldn't say any of those things because who I am today is totally different than who I was when I was 5 years old. Okay? There's no continuity there. Okay, because inherent existent things, you can't have continuity. You can't have cause and effect. Things are frozen because they're independent. They don't depend on other factors. Now, this leads, okay, we were just talking about the I within 2 moments of this life. Okay, now let's take it, instead of the I when I'm 5 years old and the I who, of today, let's take it as being my previous life's I and my present life's I. Okay, so instead of when I was 5 years old, let's just go back 6 years. Okay, so previous life's person. So, you know, if that's the case, that who I was my previous life and who I am this life are completely unrelated, then it's just like the 5-year-old and who I am today being completely unrelated, which would mean that the karma I created in my previous life, I couldn't ripen on me now. Okay, and it would mean that there would be no way for me to remember my previous life. Okay, I don't anyway. But you have, like the Buddha, when the Buddha says, and you find this in the scriptures, the Buddha will say, you know, so many eons ago I was king so-and-so, or he'll, you know, something will happen, some relationship amongst his disciples will happen, and then he'll say, oh, in a previous life, Shariputra was this, and Moggallana was that, you know. So he couldn't say any of that, because all those things would be totally unrelated people. Okay? So it would be very difficult to account for any kind of memory, either within this life or from one life to the next, or any kind of identification with who we were in the past at all. You know, even saying when I was 5 years old, couldn't even say that. Okay? So then, if the, you know, these eyes were completely unrelated, you know, previous life eye and this life eye, then we would get some more consequences. Okay? So we would get the consequence of recalling events from your previous life would be impossible. Okay? Because previous eye and this life eye, totally unrelated. Second consequence is that the actions we do in one life would not be able to bring results in another life. Just like what I do when I'm 5 years old wouldn't bring results when I, you know, who I am now. But we see that, you know, there's a continuity there, isn't there? You know, between who we were when we were five and also previous lives. And the third consequence would be that we would be able to experience the results of actions that we didn't create. Because if you still say that, you know, okay, if we, let's do it with 5 years old, but what I was doing when I was five and what I'm doing now inherently exists, you know, these two people would be totally different and unrelated. Okay? So that would mean that whatever I did when I was five, I couldn't experience the result of. And if you still say I experienced the result of that five-year-old, you could just as easily say I experienced the result of John Pell when he was 5 years old. Because five-year-old John Pell and five-year-old children are equal in the sense of being totally unrelated to children in 2010. Okay? So that would mean I could experience the results of karma that I didn't create. Because if I'm saying I, you know, that my when I'm 5 years old is unrelated to me, then, you know, everybody else when they were 5 years old is equally unrelated to me. So then I could equally experience the results of what everybody else did when they were five. So then if you extend that, you know, instead of 5 years old, you take it into previous lives, yeah, then first of all, I wouldn't be able to experience the karma I created in a previous life because previous life and this life totally disconnected. Or if you say that I do experience the results of what I did in my previous life, then I should be able to experience the results of actions all of you did in your previous lives, because who you were in your previous life is equally disconnected from who I am now as who I was in my previous life. Okay? So, you see, you run up against all these crazinesses of things don't, you know, that don't work. Yeah? So what we see, in fact, is different, yeah? So in what we see is we can actually remember things from the past, either this life or previous lives, okay? Now, how do you account for that? Okay, how do you describe that? What are the relationships between the eye of the previous life and the eye of this life? Okay? And when I say, oh, I remember when I, my previous life, or let's say 5 years old, okay, that's a little bit easier sometimes. If I say I remember when I was 5 years old, okay, is the five-year-old self the same as I am now? No. Is it totally unrelated to who I am now? No. Okay? So how we use this, how we use words to describe this, is we say there's a general self and there's specific selves. And these things are merely labeled. We have to keep this in mind. These things are merely labeled. So this, if we're talking in terms of lifetimes, then this a specific self is labeled in terms of the aggregates of that particular life. Okay? If we're talking in terms of within this lifetime, 5 years old and 59 years old, then the specific I is the I that's labeled on the 5-year-old aggregates, and then there's another specific I that's labeled independence on the 59-year-old aggregates. Okay, so those are called specific I's because they're labeled independence on whatever aggregates are there at that period of time. So if you stretch it, to, you know, you could have a specific I of the previous life and a specific I of this life. This life's I is children. Previous life's I could have been a flea. Okay? So those are two different people, you know. One is in the animal realm, one's in the human realm. The life before that could have been in a god. Okay? So you have a specific life for the life before that, a specific I for the life before that. Okay? So we have children, we have a flea, we have a god. The life before that, maybe we have a hungry ghost. The life before that, you know, who knows what in the world we had. Okay? So all of these are specific I's that are merely labeled in dependence upon the body and mind, the aggregates that are present during that life. Okay? But when I say, if I were to say, I remember my previous life, which I don't, but if I were to say that, and if it were true, then you couldn't, you know, what's the relationship between children and this flea? And when I say, I remember my previous life, who's the I that's remembering? So this is where we have a general I. Okay? So the general I is labeled in dependence upon the continuity. Yeah? So it's labeled in dependence upon the continuity of the specific I's. So if, you know, when the Buddha said, I remember being so-and-so, he's talking there about the general I. There's this general I that's merely labeled in dependence upon the specific I's. You know, one of the specific I's is the Buddha. The other specific I is King, whatever his name was. Okay? So saying, I remember being that king, you're talking there at the level of the general I. Okay? And that I is labeled independence upon these specific I's. Okay? So you can have a specific I for each lifetime because each lifetime is a different person. We can't say it's the same person. You know, if let's say my previous life was Harry and this life is children, we can't say children is Harry and Harry is children. You know? Harry is the specific I from the previous life. Children is the specific I from this life. But there is a general I that is labeled in dependence on both of them and in dependence upon all the other specific I's that happen in all the other rebirths. Okay? So you can equally do that within this life. You know, you can say there's a 1-year-old me, a 2-year-old me, a 3-year-old me, because you're just labeling all these things. So the 1-year-old me is a specific person, the 2-year-old me is a specific person, you know, and they're different persons. They have different labels. They're labeled in dependence on different aggregates because the aggregates are different ages. Okay, so those are specific I's, but they're not inherently existent. They're not totally unrelated because there's a general I that's labeled in dependence on all of them that connects them. So that, you know, what we do at one point in our life is going to influence what happens to us later on in that life, even though we're not exactly the same person. Okay? Now, you can watch how our mind sometimes works and how we really grasp at inherent existence. And the way I see that manifest very often is, you know, the Tibetans have this system of identifying the incarnations of very great masters. Yeah. And so the disciples often get very, very excited, you know, and like with Lama Yeshe, you know, when he passed away and then, you know, his incarnation was found, then people would look at that baby and say, that's Lama Yeshe. Now, that actually isn't Lama Yeshe, is it? Because Lama Yeshe passed away. If you say that that's Lama Yeshe, then Lama Yeshe died, but Lama Yeshe's still alive. Yeah. So that, you know, one life was Lama Yeshe, the next life was Osho. Okay? So each one of those are specific eyes, and they have specific aggregates. Okay? The body and mind, you know, of Lama Yeshe is not the body and mind of Osho. They're different bodies and minds. Now, there's a continuity between the mind of Lama Yeshe and Osho. But they're not exactly the same, because when you leave this body, you give up the aggregates of this life, okay? And you take on five new aggregates. So Lama's aggregates are not Osho's aggregates. But you would find that the disciples would look at Osho and say, oh, that's Lama. But it's not Lama. And then get all excited, like, Osho is going to act exactly the same way Lama is going to act. No. Or that Osho is going to remember you. You know? Did he remember you? Did he remember you? I'm so important that he should remember me? Yeah, I meet people in this lifetime, I don't even remember them. You know, but you can really see sometimes when we talk about identifying the incarnations, how many of the disciples really grasp at true existence at that time and expect the future life of their teacher to be exactly like their present teacher. But they're not. It's a different specific eye, and it's different aggregates. And of course there's a continuity between one and the other. They're not totally unrelated, but they're not the same. Okay? You're just as, you know, between one day and the next, we're not the same person, are we? Okay, there's the general I, but yesterday's I and today's I are different. Not inherently different, but they're different. Okay? Yeah?
So there's a continuity of consciousness between lives.
Uh-huh.
But consciousness is one of the five aggregates that's given up.
Mm-hmm.
So why would there be a continuity of consciousness when there isn't a continuity of form or...
Okay, so, yeah. So why is there a continuity of consciousness if there isn't a continuity of the body? Well, the body is material things. You know, we can see the body dies, it gets recycled. Even if some of the molecules, let's say some of the molecules of this body were recycled into the earth that grew the vegetables that nourished your next life, you know, still we wouldn't say that it's the same body, even if we have the continuity of the same atoms and molecules. Okay. Now, we say there's a continuity of consciousness, but we also say that when you die, you give up the five aggregates of this life. Okay? Because let's say somebody is a flea in one life, and they're a human being in the next life. You have to give up the consciousness of a flea, the consciousness aggregate of the flea, to be able to be reborn with the consciousness aggregate of a human being. So the consciousness aggregate, which is referring to the primary consciousness, You know, that is given up at the time of death. But there is a continuity of consciousness in the sense that there's a continuity of clarity and awareness. Okay? So that's how you define mind, clarity and awareness or clarity and knowing. There's a consciousness. There's a continuity of that. But the exact consciousness aggregate of one life ceases so that the consciousness aggregate of the next life can arise. Okay?
So what are we talking about when we're talking about the consciousness aggregate of, say, jhampa?
Okay.
If it's not the clarity and awareness.
Okay. The consciousness aggregate of Jhampel is referring to the primary visual consciousness, primary auditory. When we're saying like the primary consciousness, it means just the mind that focuses on that specific type of sensory data. You know, any cognition that we have isn't just a primary mind. There's the five omnipresent mental factors. There's all sorts of other mental factors mixed in to make a whole mental state. But the primary consciousness is just the part of that big mental state that cognizes that type of object. So the primary visual consciousness sees colors and shapes. Auditory consciousness for sound. Olfactory consciousness. Gustatory consciousness. Tactile consciousness. Mental consciousness. Okay? But to have an actual mental state, you need not only the primary mind, but also all the mental factors. So that's where you have the aggregate of feeling, the aggregate of discrimination, all the other the mental factors that are in the aggregate of conditioning factors, or compositional factors. So a whole mental state draws from all these different aggregates. Okay? But the consciousness aggregate itself refers only to the primary minds. Yeah? And so all those, you know, all the five aggregates of the flea have to cease for the five aggregates of the human being to arise. Because if you look, the five aggregates of a flea, okay, a flea's mental aggregate, you know, is very different than a human being, isn't it? You know, a flea does not have all the conceptual ability, intellectual ability that we have. So you can't say that the primary mental consciousness of the flea continues into this life and becomes a human consciousness. You have to say that it ceases, but it's the clarity and awareness of the consciousness continues on. Okay?
Yeah, just a little clarity about what it is that remembers. It's the general self that might have the continuity in terms of not continuity, but remembers. I'm a bit confused.
Okay, so yes, the question is, when we talk about memory, who is, what's going on here? Okay, there you're talking about the general I. The general I is what allows somebody to, what allows the Buddha to say, when I was king and so and so, this was what happened. Okay, because there it's the general I that is merely labeled in dependence upon the previous, you know, that king's specific I and his present I, you know, because the two are connected. Okay? Yeah, the two are connected. If they were inherently existent, they wouldn't be connected in any way whatsoever. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Want this to be a contentious question, but my mind goes funny whenever we get to this one that says the person would inherently arise and disintegrate, inherently. As soon as you say that, causality goes out the window.
Exactly.
So then this whole list of things that are all about causality
go out the
window. Why are we saying this?
Right.
Because we already negated that with point one.
Right, right, right. That's the point. That's the point. Yeah. You know, if the I is inherently existent, you know, somebody could say there's an inherently existent I and it still arises and ceases. That's what the lower systems say.
I see.
They say there's an inherently existent I and it arises and ceases. Okay? But if, you had an inherently existent I that arises and ceases, then you would have all these contradictions, you know, because an inherently existent I can't arise and cease. And if it did, then the previous one, the present one, would be totally unrelated.
Right. Okay, so the list there is to refute the lower schools.
Yeah.
The whole, okay, thank
yeah.
you.
Okay. Okay. So, so that, you know, we find that, in fact, memory does exist. Okay, so that refutes one of the faults of inherent rise, the person inherent rising and ceasing. Okay, another fault of if a person inherently existent person arise and cease would be that we wouldn't be able to experience the results of our previous actions. Okay, and the reason for that is that, you know, the two selves would be totally disconnected. Okay, but when we die, you know, there would be no continuity that experiences the result because they're disconnected. Okay, so when we say I experience the result of my actions, there we're talking about the general I. Okay, because the person that experiences the result isn't exactly the same person that created the action. Because cause and result don't happen at the same time. So the person that created the action is one specific I. The person that experiences the result is another specific I. But those two are related. Okay? If things were inherently existent, they wouldn't be related. Okay? Okay. Then the third fault of things inherently arising and ceasing would be that we could experience the results of actions that we didn't create. Okay. And the reason for that is if the earlier and the later I's are totally unrelated, okay, then and you're still saying that the later I experienced the result of the earlier I, even though they're totally unrelated, then another person's earlier I is just as totally unrelated to who you are today. So you should be able to experience the results of actions you didn't commit. Okay? Because everything is equally unrelated. Okay. Also, what you would find, what would happen, is if the previous, you know, self and the present self are both inherently existent, yeah, and they're totally unrelated people, then the previous self would not have to die for this life self to be reborn. Okay, because they're totally unrelated to each other. Yeah? If the self of the previous life, you know, if they inherently rise and cease, then they have to be totally unrelated. Yeah, if they're totally unrelated, then the first, then last life person doesn't need to die for this life person to be reborn. Yeah. So you get all these stupid things happening. Okay? And similarly, I could experience the result of somebody else's karma because that person is equally other to who I am now as my own previous life. Okay? Because with inherent existence, you can't have continuity. Because continuity implies cause and effect. And inherent existence means that things don't depend on any other factors. So they're totally frozen identities. Okay? Now you can see sometimes, you know, how our mind works, how we get into these mental states where we're not thinking clearly and we're grasping an inherent existence. So, for example, yeah, let's say we did some really horrible negative action 10 years ago and we feel very bad about it this life, right now. Okay. Actually, those are two different specific I's. There's still one general I, because who I am now is going to experience, you know, if I killed somebody and I'm in prison now, who I am now is related to that previous specific I, because I never experienced the result of what that specific I did. Okay? So there's some relationship there. Yeah, you can't say that they're totally different. But let's say I looked back and looked at that, and we sometimes get in these mental states, I look back to the person of 10 years ago, and I think that that's the same me I am now. And I say, I'm such a horrible person. I'm such a disgusting person. I did such negative things. And we're grasping on to inherent existence, really feeling like who we are now is exactly the same person that did those awful actions. And so we feel so much guilt because we're getting very confused, thinking that, the 10 years ago I and the present I are somehow getting conflated. So we feel that we are that same, awful. Well, first of all, we're confusing the action with the agent and thinking that, the person is awful because the action is awful. But we're also confusing an awful person from before with an the person who we are now. And so I think this is very helpful when we do purification, is to remember that the 10 years ago person who did that awful action is not exactly the same person we are now. So we can look back at that person, understand how he or she was thinking, understand his or her problems, their pain, their difficulties. We can have compassion for that person. Okay, and in doing that, we're seeing that we're not exactly the same person. And so by offering some compassion to that person who we were, then that really helps us to purify and to forgive ourselves. Okay? On the other hand, we can't say that who we were 10 years ago is totally unrelated to who we are now, because that would mean that who I am now isn't experiencing the result of what I did 10 years ago. Okay? So you see, if we say that 10 years ago I and the present I are inherently one and the same, then we're going to feel like I'm the exact same person who did that awful action, therefore I hate myself. Okay. Or if I go to this other extreme and I say they're unrelated, then, there's no cause and effect. That person did that. It has no bearing on who I am today. And so we see that both of those approaches are incorrect. Okay. We aren't exactly the same person who did that action. So we have to be able to look at who we were and understand them, forgive them. Okay, grow from the experience. But also, we can't just shine it on and say, somebody else did that. It has nothing to do with me. Because it does, because there is a continuity. Okay? Yeah?
Then why do they call it rebirth? If you're going to get rid of the aggregates you got now and take on a new set, then why do they call it rebirth?
Okay, why do they call it rebirth if the aggregates of one lifetime cease and you take on a new set of aggregates? Because when we say the person appropriates or takes on the aggregates, the person we're speaking of at that moment is the general I.
Okay?
Okay? Mm-hmm. That merely labeled general I.
I was confused.
Yeah. Yeah. You're getting cross-eyed. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So this, what continues on is this clarity and awareness.
Uh-huh.
And clarity and awareness sound so generic.
Yes, so
it
is.
How is it mind?
Okay. So when we say that there's a continuity of clarity and awareness from one life to the next, again, it's moments of clarity and awareness. Don't think.
Yeah.
It's just moment after moment of clarity and awareness. And in dependence upon that, we label I. So we say there is the continuity of the self from one life to the next, but that's talking about the general self. Or when we say there's a continuity of consciousness between one life or another, we're talking about the general consciousness. We're not talking about the specific consciousness of the flea and the specific consciousness of the human being.
Okay. Now I'm trying to make the general consciousness solid.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the one thing after another,
yeah.
Grab on.
Yeah, it's true.
Hold on.
Right.
Let it go moment by moment.
Yeah. 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 So that's a good point. She said that she's trying to make the general I solid. Like it's solid. It comes out of the flea and it goes clunk into the, you know. Yeah. Yeah, so we're coming back to the soul. So the whole idea is that things are changing moment by moment by moment. What arises in the second moment is different from what existed before, but they're related. How are they related? Causally related. They aren't totally unrelated. Okay. So this is something to really think about. Again and again. There's two, when in Buddhism, we use the word relationship a lot, and there's two kinds of ways that objects can be related. One is that they're the same nature, meaning that they occur at the same time, and one can't exist without the other. Okay? So, you know, my I is one nature with my consciousness, or I guess we'd say that the aggregates in the self are one nature. You know, they exist at the same time. One can't exist without the other, but they're not the same thing. They're dependent on each other. How are they dependent? Because they're one nature. Okay. Then the other kind of relationship is a cause and effect relationship, and these things do not exist at the same time. Because cause and effect exist at different moments. So two things that are one nature must exist at the same time. Two things that are cause and effect must exist at different times. Okay. Another example of one nature is a general category and all the things that are particulars of that category. Okay. So if I said... table and the table in the living room. Okay, the table in the living room is one nature with the general table. They exist at the same time. You can't have the table in the living room as something separate from just the general category of table. So, you know, table in the living room is one nature with table. But they aren't exactly the same thing. Because the table in the living room is just this table, whereas table, when we say the word in general, is just a general category. Okay? So it's very helpful to remember those two kinds of relationships, either one nature or cause and effect. Okay? So, wow, we covered all of that in 1 hour. So there's really a lot to think about in this, quite a bit to think about, and I find it really fascinating because it really makes your mind think, you know, well, what is reborn? And what's the relationship between one life and the next? And if you have difficulty thinking in terms of rebirth, then just think of 5-year-old me and however old you are now me. What's the relationship between the two of them? Okay? Yeah?
When I think in terms of just a moment to moment, that's what I think of, that brings a... it shakes inside.
Oh, yeah.
So is that self-cherishing getting activated?
Okay. So when we think of ourself as just something that exists moment to moment, not as one solid thing, it feels very, very shaky inside. What is it that's shaking? That's the ignorance. Yeah. It's the ignorance that's shaking. Because the ignorance wants to hold that, first of all, there's a permanent person. And second of all, there's an inherently existent person. So when we begin to see that the person is neither permanent nor inherently existent, then you know, all that ignorance that is grasping at the opposite gets shaken up. Yeah? And so our mind that likes everything to be nice and smooth and predictable and feel like it always feels gets shaken up. So when that happens, we should say, good. Good. Now my meditation is having a positive effect. Yeah. I'm getting some feel for impermanence. I'm getting some feel for emptiness. When you get shaken up, you should feel this is good. It means my meditation is successful.
Is that why you feel disconnected all the time? I can feel disconnected with everything.
No, feeling disconnected.
Disconnected,
like separate and alienated from everything else?
So transient.
Okay, if we feel transient, if we feel like, you know, we're just moment by moment by moment by moment, you know, then, yeah, that changes our image of who we are, isn't it? We can't be one solid, concrete person if we're changing moment by moment, can we? Yeah. And we like to think, oh, I'm solid and concrete, you know, so that when I die, I don't change at all. I just sail right through death. You know, because there's this solid me that just goes on. You know?
So, just another question on this rebirth. So, let's say Joe Smith dies and has a rebirth, not as a human, but is reborn in another realm.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not Joe Smith, so who are they?
Okay, so question is, Joe Smith is alive,
right.
He dies,
right.
He's reborn as a god.
Okay.
So Joe Smith ceased at the time of the death of this lifetime.
Right.
Now often in our conventional language we say Joe Smith was reborn. Actually Joe Smith wasn't reborn. It's the general I that was reborn. Because Joe Smith was a human being, that next life is a deva, is a god. So they have different aggregates.
But what about the Daleks? Are they called Daleks? The Tibetan Daleks? Okay. They all get messages from people who've died?
Okay, so the Tibetans talk about Daleks, which are people who died, but then kind of they leave this body, they go roam around, and then they come back to this body. You know, if you say that, then that's still the same person. They haven't given up the aggregates of this lifetime yet. Yeah? Why don't we remember more from previous lives? Why don't we remember where we put our car keys yesterday? Yeah? Why don't I remember what somebody said to me yesterday? Yeah. You know, I'm spaced out today. Somebody asked me to do something yesterday. I totally zone out today. Why don't I remember? Lack of mindfulness. Yeah, lack of introspective awareness. Distraction. Okay. So we have to stop now?
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all other and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual masters be stable, and their divine actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Losam's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the 3 worlds always increase.
Due to this merit,
may we soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha,
that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May that precious body mine, not yet born or rise and grow, may that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain paradise, you're the source of good and happiness, powerful tents and gates of tenacity. May you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma, done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the ten directions, and especially at Travasiya in the West, flourish.